I firmly believe over the years and years that I've been doing this that there's a dead zone in height in which a deer associate danger with. This stupid misconception for so many years that you need to be 20 feet, it's all gimmicks to sell more sticks, to sell more ladders, to get high. Like, I mean, everybody, I've literally heard, and PA is the worst for this. Oh, I gotta get high. These deer literally walk in the woods and they look up. Then why the hell would you get high? Well, why would you get high if you're telling me every deer walks in the woods and they look up at the Stanford trees? Why not get where they're not looking?
There you have it. That is
really getting jacked up.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. This week, we are going to take a look back to last year's Mobile Hunter Roadshow in Benton, Pennsylvania at our Roadshow Q&A segment featuring the East Coast Roadshow crew. This will be part one of two parts of the Roadshow Benton Q&A. We kick this one off talking about big timber hunting, e-scouting, lengths of tree stand sits, hunting pinches, all sorts of great things. Let's get into it. Hope you enjoy. Starting from the top down, what is your go-to method for hunting big timber? I always analyze a piece on how efficient I can hunt it, how easy it's going to be to hunt, how to access it. So, and then I'll take a bigger chunk. Let's say you're working with 10,000 acres. I'm not even going to look at that as a 10,000 acre chunk. I'm going to take 1,000 of it, and I'm going to go scout that, and I'm going to break that down, and I'm going to hunt that until I figure that out. And if what I want's there, I'll stay there. If it's not, I'll move on. But in the past, I've tried to look at pieces as a whole and start to you know, aerial scout or this or do that. And in my opinion, nothing is learned, you know, prior than actually putting boots on the ground. And then once I do that, I have a way better idea of what's going on. But then I'll be able to systematically then just move over chunk to chunk. And I find that's the easiest way for me to break down and get myself in the best spot. And you might never end up in the spot you're looking for, but you're going to be way more, you're going to have a more clear path than if you were just, oh man, it's overwhelming. That much ground is like, well, how do I scout all this ground? And then you're constantly jumping over here and over there, and then you never give the one section really its due.
I look for two things, like above everything else. So the very first is access. So I want to make sure, one, is it hard to access? Two, do I have to cross water? Is there like mud or swamps? Like, the more difficult it is for me to get to, the better my chance is, in my opinion, of finding a mature deer there. That also means that there's less people going in there. So that same note falls for how many parking locations are around your property. Like, if you're in a state where you have to park in a designated parking area, or, you know, like, I've not hunted Illinois, but I'm doing some cyber scouting right now for Illinois. My first step is to go on my Onyx and pin every visible parking location around that WMA or QDMA so that I can then look and, like, on my map, section off the areas that have the least number of people accessing them based on where they have to park. People are like deer. They're going to take the easiest route more often than not. Number two is going to be edge. So if I can find an area where there's limited access or extremely difficult access, or I have to go above and beyond to get there, and there's a bunch of different edges coming together, whether that's topo, whether that's hardwoods to like a cutover, you know, or like sometimes you'll have where the trees just don't grow as high in a specific area. You'll have like a lot of big mature timber that butts right up to a private property that's been timbered, or an area where the soil is a little poor. Those deer will relate to that edge, and I can focus on that. And going off of what Cody said, that lets me narrow down like what I need to be tailoring my approach to.
Same thing, access, and you say edge, I say transition. The same difference, really. I want to see, first off, where can I park? How many people may be there? How far do I have to go? How easy is it for other people? You know, the more people, the less deer. Deer don't want to be where people are. Or they want to be where they can easily monitor everyone and have an easy out. Like he's saying, edge, whoever was it asked, you specifically asked about big timber. I like to look at a topo or an aerial photo of summer or spring with our green foliage as well as fall foliage. And what I'm looking for is, like you said, is an edge. Anywhere that it looks like there's two different types of vegetation, whether it be from agriculture, if you're lucky enough to have that, but big habitat. Do you have mountain laurels then breaking up into a mature oak forest? Do you have just pine sections? Do you have swampier grounds? Deer like to have all these different things. They don't eat the same thing year-round. They're going to be picking at what's available at different times. There's different foods, different covers. Each of these different kind of zones in the woods have their own purpose. So I'm looking at access, and then I'm looking for where's a transition from old growth to new growth, or pine forest into a hardwood or swampy. And I'm always walking those edges. And, you know, Cody said if he's got a 10,000 piece, he looks at 1,000 acres. I'll do the same, but I'll say I think these four spots are probably the best. And if I don't see anything in the four spots that I don't think are the best, forget the other 900 acres of it. If I don't find good sign in what I think is the best area, I'm picking that next access point, looking at the next transitions, and that's where I'm going to scout.
I kind of attack similarly. A little bit of online scouting in my area. It's not public. It's a private large piece with a lot of access roads for four-wheelers and all. But try to find the areas that I'd be more focused on and go check them out, boots on the ground. If there's something I like, I'll stick around and maybe hang a trail camera and see if there's the right deer I'm after. This year, I found a whole lot of sign kind of backed up against a absolute barrier that they can't cross. And I'm going to be focusing in on that a lot. It's actually a big cliff overhanging the interstate, and it's a funnel, and there's huge sign. So I'm going to be focusing in on that a lot this year.
Right wind sounds like a killer setup.
Yep.
I'm a believer that, and this is my personal philosophy, and it sounds like it's a little different than these guys. Like, maybe I'm not good at reading maps, but I don't think anybody can look at a map and see where a big buck is living. I think the only way to find out is you got to go look at it, because I've hunted farms. And I'm pretty on it. I've hunted farms for weeks and didn't find until I pressed a 170 making this route in a little core area, just held up real tight, not making much sign, not leaving a big track. You know, he was a younger deer, but he was the deer I was after. So I think it's very important that, I mean, systematically, it depends on how much ground you have before you want to just start X-ing out ground. But it's always a good idea. I would recommend that nobody ever just look at a map and throw ground out the window, just because you just don't know. I mean, you it could look great on the map, and it could hunt like shit, and it could be vice versa. It could look like shit and hunt great. So I'm going to leave you with that.
Now that's one of the reasons I like to look at an aerial of fall,
two different
dead,
seasons,
winter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then look at something with summer, because you get a little bit better of look. Is it just that picture?
And you can do that. You can do that on Google Earth, right? I think
you can do that on Google Earth or on X, anything like that. But that gives me my spots where I'm going to put my boots on the ground. I don't want to just walk 1,000 acres.
It's a starting point.
Yes,
like that's all the push at cyber scouting and like trying to whittle down areas is just so that you don't, like Cody said, you end up with a 10,000 acre piece and you're like, well, you know, how the hell do I like break this thing down? Like, it's way too much. I don't have the time to do that. So you can shrink down your areas and then at least know he's not there, and then X those off and look for other spots. You know,
90% of my map, if I pick 10 spots I want to go look at, 9 times out of 10, I'd say 8 out of 10 are X'd off. You know, anytime I'm scouting, I'm usually X'ing out large chunks of territory. And then I'm left with the smaller ones to focus on, if that makes sense.
What is your average sit in stand? How much time? This is pretty... So I've always been... I don't stay up in the stand too long, just a couple hours at a crack. If I'm having... I usually let the hunt dictate that. If there's a lot of action going on and there's good movement, I will... sit there a little longer, but I'm very impatient and I can't sit in one spot for too long. So it's only my average sit is only an hour to 2 hours maybe. And then I'm out of there. I will take into account the moon phase a little bit. So, and I'll just have a general consensus of what the moon phase is and when I think that natural feeding pattern will be. And that'll dictate where I sit and when I sit there, but it's never really for an extended period of time. I've never once in my life sat all day, even in November. And honestly, yeah, I might even move more in November. So, yeah, mine are short and sweet.
I'm a short sit guy. I talked about that earlier. This is actually something Cody helped me a lot with. So, you know, I give credit where credit is due. You know, I used to sit all day. I would take a climber. I'd post up. You know, a couple things that are bad about that. One, your wind is never going to be the same dawn to dusk. So most of the time, you're not going to find a spot that you can sit in with the wind or the thermals in your favor all day long. Just doesn't happen very often. So by bouncing around, you push yourself to find other spots or to react to that wind. Other thing is, I work, you know, like we all do. You know, one of the things I learned a lot from Cody is it's as much repetitions in the woods as it is the being in the right spot. Like, it takes time in the woods to learn where the deer are, what they're doing. And if you're sitting 2 hours every morning or 3 days a week or 4 days a week versus, you know, 1 day a week or just on a Friday afternoon or just on a Saturday morning, it gives you all that many more opportunities to see that fresh track or, you know, come across where he's going to be or catch that fresh rub the day it's made. And that might give you the edge to know, you know, what you need to do to get after that deer. So for me, I'm usually 3 hours or less. You know, most of the time I'm out of the stand by 9. I got to be in the office by 10. You know, so that's my bread and butter.
Generally, I mean, if I'm on, you know, just your general hunt and bed feed, let's just say outside of rutting activity, strong rutting activity, bed and feed pattern hunting, I'm sit probably 3 hours is about my average sit. When it comes to rut, if I don't have to be at work or someone else, I'm in that tree. I mean, I don't care if it's 11 in the morning. If I don't have to be at work, I'm going to go climb out in the tree. I've just seen so much random stupid shit happen during the rut that there is no right time. Any place could about be the right time during the rut. So when my general setups, bed feed hunting, maybe about 3 hours. The rut, I'm in a tree if I can be. But I may not stay in the same stand. I may be in the woods all day. I may be on stand. I may be scouting. I may be switching stands. But I try to be in the woods all day during the rut.
Yeah, I will say this. There has been – now, I can't do it just because I'm not physically able to do it. I will go crazy, my mind. I've ran into some slammers at 11, at 9, at 7:30 when I was just antsy. Like, I'll get down, and I just have the mentality of not caring, and I'll just, like – but there's a lot of times where I'm like, damn, man, if you could have just held it out 20 minutes, it'd be a different season right now. But you don't know. So, like you know, do you – to me, it's always that challenge of, like you said, it's literally it in November, it's a crapshoot. But, I mean, even earlier, it's just if you can tough it out and you're in a good spot and it's the rut and, like, especially transition, and that goes to permanent to, like, permanent stands. I know guys who have stands set up in pinches or, like, it sounds like Zach might have found one of those spots this past year. I got a specific buddy who's got he hunts ground, and there's two lakes that come down, and they literally pinch down like 50 yards. And there's like a bluff on one side. And I remember scouting his property, and I'm like, dude, I'm like, man, you got to see some awesome deer here. He's like, oh, like, and he never hunted it. And I'm like, dude, hang a stand right there. Like, but that is the prime example of what I'm talking about. Like, if you got one of those, I mean, you camp there all day, every day in November. I mean, it is just if you're into playing the waiting game and you can hang, if you can do that. I know people who do that on good spots, sits or good spots, who shoot a slammer every year.
I got one to roll off of that. So you get a spot like that that's a 50 yard wide pinch.
Yep.
how often are you going to be in there? Is that something that you're going to try to save for like a specific time period or moon phase or something like that? Or is that something that you're just going to aggressively get into?
I would grab it. I would. It all depends, like, where it is.
And if you have any intel.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have prior intel of what time deer are traveling or what deer, that can all help. But that's all situation.
Exactly. So, like, let's say you take that situation and there just happens to be smack dab in the middle of a buck you're hunting's, like pattern.
Yeah.
And he's feeding on one side, bedding on the other. Well, then it's just I'd get in there as soon as I could, as soon as I humanly could possible, you know. But if it's just one of those things where there might not be anything hanging out there during the normal season, but you can bet your ass in November when they start cruising, there will be a slammer that comes through there, or if there's a good one in the area, you know.
So there is a direct correlation though to how much pressure you want to put in an area like that. Like that's not something that if you have no intel going into there, you want to save that for the right time period and not.
No, I'd go hunt it. I'd check it out.
Yeah.
No, you can go hunt it if you want, but if like.
That's how you get your intel.
Yeah,
if you don't have any intel,
you can throw a camera, but like I always come back to wind too. So that's going to dictate right there. So the wind's only going to be right for that setup. Probably, you know, maybe 70% of the time, depending on the layout of your property. But if you got two lakes or you got a bluff, now that's where we get into thermals or some questions like that.
That's the reason I asked that, because I got a very, very similar situation with the thermals that are there.
Right.
I've actually studied them already, and I know it changes for seasonal too. But the thermals right there are absolutely crazy. I forget who said it before, but in the morning, you'll drop milkweed and it goes straight up.
Well, that's perfect. That's a perfect situation. And that's the thing. Like those, I've hunted I've actually killed a buck in the morning in the same exact, not that tight of a pinch, but backed up to a bluff.
Yeah.
And the thermals are just horrible in there. And I know that I can only sit in that stand till like 7:45. And as soon as that, I stop getting that uplift, I got to leave because then it starts swirling. But that's where, like, that spot, it would all depend on, you know, the wind direction. You know, if you got the wind is right for it. And if you know you're in the game there, hunt it as much as you can.
Yep.
I mean, like, you know.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, big factor for me this year. And I actually sent Cody a video message when I found out I got hunted a property 4 days in a row. And then was like, I'm not finding him here. And I ran up a ridge, and boom, there's signed big, fresh rubs. Like, he was there. He was there that morning.
Yep.
And, you know, I had not hunted that part of the property. But it's like, if I know he's there, I'm going there. Yeah, that's where I'm going to be.
Yep.
So, you know, I try to base, when I'm going into a spot, I try to base it off of, like, fresh sign, you know, first and foremost. Like, if I feel like that he's there, that's his corridor, or if it's outside the rut, and I know he's coming one way or another, you know, if there's evidence of him being there, then that's where I'm going to be.
Yep.
But one last thing to add on this topic before we get off. The original question was, how long do you sit? A lot of that depends on me, on human pressure. The more human pressure is, the shorter my sits. If you got people going in and out, these deer are on a strict pattern, and they're trying to get to bed before sunup. They're not really coming out till late. If you're on a property where you don't have human interaction, you don't have pressure, you find deer milling on other food sources. You find them getting up and getting water or traveling a little bit further from their beds with more freedom than being to such strict, you know, evening, morning schedules like you find a lot of time on pressure properties. Pressure properties, I want to be there for that, you know, first spark in the morning, last in the evening, or a lot of times I like to go around 11 o'clock. Everyone else has been out of the woods or on their way out. I'll go sit in the woods in the middle of the day, especially for sicko hunting. I find it to be phenomenal. When no one's in the woods that midday, a lot of times they move. They won't move far, but they will get up and move.
The first week of bow season this year, I was in a buck's bedroom, and it ended up being a couple bucks' bedroom. I didn't know that. But the opening morning, the two nice bucks, one was a 150, came in and bedded at about 45 yards at around 9:45. So that kind of, from then on, I kind of knew they were coming in late. So I stuck it out every chance I could, and ended up seeing those deer quite a few times and killed one of them. So situational to me. Yeah.
So it's about hunting a specific buck.
So it's like basically.
But I don't understand it.
The question is like, so when do you
When do you start giving up a specific buck?
Space. So it's like
when you back off?
Yeah.
Or when you close the distance?
Yeah, I think they're trying to ask, like, when...
That's actually my question. When do you get, like, summer scouting? You're after a specific buck, and you know where he's at, you know where his summer bed's at. When do you start to give that buck some space?
As soon as you know where he's at. If you know he's there, then you know he's there, stay out. In my opinion. I don't know what you guys say. But if you know he's there, why would you want to... If you know he's there and that's his summer space, the last thing you want to do is push him away from him.
But what if you haven't found where his fall space is at yet?
I wait till fall. Yeah. You don't want to push him out of his summer space in summer. That's when the mobile system comes in handy. You get in there in fall... When the moon's right, the temperature's right, you think the winds are right, you get in mobile, you find the spot, and you don't have to find just a tree anymore. You find the spot, and that's what this system is all about, 100%. Oh, yeah. I had something different. Just jumped
in. Yeah, I second that. I've always been, I don't like to do anything in the summer.
His space will change per that, summer and fall, but, like, just change with him.
Yeah.
You know, once you know he's there, then just find him when he's there.
You won't find his fall spot during summer, if that makes sense.
That's one misconception. I think people are so gung-ho, and there's a difference between, like, being amped and wanting to learn, and then also, but it can also be a really detrimental to a piece of hunting property, especially if you're limited and it is a private piece of property. Or, like, the more you're messing around in there, the more you're going to just mess it up for hunting season. Like, I've had, you know, good deer living on pieces, and other guys hunting that ground just couldn't stop checking trail cameras and couldn't stop being in there and, like, just wanting to – and that kind of stuff can go backwards. So I'd be very careful with that. Let me see here. When will your stand choice change during season, or will you stay with one setup throughout a season? Reasons for switching. I think we might have touched on this before, but I'm big into, like, wanting one thing that does all. My style really doesn't change, like, throughout the season much. It's always the same. And I think this means, like actual stand and stick?
Yeah, I think
so. Or, like, does it mean, like, how you're setting in the tree? But either way, I keep mine the same. I'm a creature of habit. I need to be doing the same thing all the time, and I don't typically switch things up.
I've mentioned it a couple times. The nice thing about these stands, though, is, like, if you do, like, for me, I run long sticks sometimes. I'll run short sticks sometimes. You know, I know the guys talk about running doubles sometimes, running minis sometimes. They all fit together really well. So whether you're running, like, a 1.0 or a 0.5 or, you know, a 2.0, like, most of everything seats the same way.
Yeah,
so if you do want to make an adjustment and, like, you want to sit – for a long rut sit and you want that 1.0 or that 2.0 to sit all day and be extra comfy, it's the same way you would run your 0.5.
You're changing a piece, not changing your system.
Yeah.
Pretty seamless transition.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is my question right here. I like this one. So being from heavy pressure PA, I've always hunted 20 feet. Can you talk about how you set up low in a tree to avoid detection? No, there's obvious benefits to carrying less gear, and would like to start hunting low. So, I'm a huge. If you guys didn't know, I'm a huge advocate of hunting low. I've been doing it for a long, long time, and I've successfully gotten a lot of people who are killing deer consistently now doing the same thing. Everybody I talk to at first, it's just like when you get in the habit of something, it's hard to do something else. Like, it's hard to make that leap and try it. So many people every year I talk to them at shows. Year in, year out, even friends. A lot of my friends, like, just a couple years ago, would fight me tooth and nail about, like, oh, no, I need to be higher. Where I'm hunting, I need to be higher. Nope, can't do it where I'm hunting. Like, everybody says the same thing. And when they finally try it, they get what I'm saying. Now, I want to first start off by saying that, you know, there are times I don't hunt low. Like, thermals is a good example. If I need to get in a spot to where, like, I need to get high to get that lift or to escape something, I will do it. But 95% of the time, 98% of the time, a lot of the time, I'm very low. And another thing to take into account, like, what I think some people, where they gravitate away from it, is they'll try it. You don't understand. You do need another level of stealth. Like, it's not for everybody, trust me. And those of you who are like this, you'll know. If you're a fidgeter, it's not going to work for you. if you haven't quite honed in to like what you're doing there, which is fine. Like I spent years doing that, just figuring things out. I mean, like I've always just learned by doing, right? So for years I was screwing up. Many a deer that should be on the wall, but they're not. And I see a lot of people get into hunting low or very low, and they can't sit still. And that's a no-no. Now, I mean, like, I will say when you're hunting low, you have to have more of a stealth approach to you. You're not going to get away with standing up, turning around, and shooting a deer when you're at their eye level. It's not going to happen. But if you can keep your composure and you can stay still and you can and you know how to read the terrain and you know how to read the sign and you know where you're setting up and you can visualize what you're doing, it is completely deadly. Because I firmly believe over the years and years that I've been doing this that there's a dead zone in height in which a deer associate danger with. This stupid misconception for so many years that you need to be 20 feet, it's all gimmicks to sell more sticks, to sell more ladders, to get high. Like, I mean, everybody, I've literally heard, and PA is the worst for this. Oh, I gotta get high. These deer literally walk in the woods and they look up. Then why the hell would you get high? Well, why would you get high if you're telling me every deer walks in the woods and they look up at the stand for trees? Why not get where they're not looking? So deer look for danger on the ground level. You know, they got coyotes, they got predators or whatever. And, you know, they've been accustomed now looking high in these trees from tree stand hunters. I really do believe there's a dead zone. And that 8 to 12 feet, 6 to whatever, just getting off the ground. But also, you know, you're sort of at that plane where the deer are looking through you. They're analyzing. Now, if you can stay still, movement's horrible. But if you can stay still, you will go undetected with the right wind. And it's deadly. It can be deadly.
I think one of the things, Cody, you'll absolutely agree with this, I think you just kind of breezed over without thinking about, is cover.
I was
getting to that.
Cover is super important. Whether it doesn't have to be massive, just something to break up your figure and your outline. And I think that's what you're getting to about where you say, you know, you think about the low-lying canopy here. You can see through the woods, but not from here down. But then there's a clearing. You look through these woods, you can't see 2 feet high, but you can't see higher than 10 feet up. And there's kind of that zone that you can be in between kind of the canopy cover and still in the low-lying cover.
Covering.
When I had a climber, if I could get 30 feet in a tree, I was getting 30 feet in a tree. I was getting absolutely as high as I could all the time. One of the big reasons was he was saying movement, fidgeting, using the camera. But now I can get in better spots. So now that I can be in the better spot and the right spot, I don't have to be so high up to be undetected. I can be in that one key spot versus having to make just the best of the situation by getting up high.
That canopy line is so key. Like I was telling a couple of you guys earlier, like this last season, like I picked off a handful of hunters walking through public where you're literally walking in the, like where we are, you have young saplings that'll top out and then it's just straight trees. It's just sky. And you can walk through there and from 100 yards away see Joe Blow sitting up there in the top of the tree. And he looks like a black bear standing on a tree stand with a giant backpack strapped to the other side of the tree. It's like if I can see you and like I gotta wear glasses, you know, that deer is picking you off like nobody's business. So
cover and wind. Cover and wind and thermals. The biggest things I would say to hunting low successfully.
Yeah, I mean, I don't gravitate too much toward the cover more than I do, just because I know if you look at that height, and when I started to experiment with this long ago, like you don't need the additional cover because you're in that cover zone already. Like so, let's look at it. Even in open hardwoods, like I've killed deer literally on a setup just like that, just right there. Right off the ground, that one low. No cover, not one branch on that tree. But look at it though. There's no way a deer is skylining me. Like, you know, no, and if you are still, it's movement that they see. And that's where the bullshit about this camo is too. I've been hunting with no camo for a long time now. And just, I mean, it's not it's not a necessary thing to do. And if you can be stealthy enough, like, it's try it out. Just be still. I mean, I know this year, late season, I remember sets that I literally think about, like, they were painful. They literally hurt to sit there that still. I was hunting 6-7 feet off the ground on major trails coming out to big cut ag fields when it got very, very cold in the Midwest. And when you get in that situation, you got to get there early because they're moving early, and you got to wait till late, till them big ones come out late. They wait. And it's like, it's a mental game. You go, you're like, okay, I'm going to have to stick it out for 3 hours out there. It's negative 20 degrees, and I'm sitting in a stand like this, and I got deer coming 3 feet from me. If you spook one, it's over. You're done for that day. So, like, having to sit there and not move a damn muscle for hours until you get that shot, like, it's tough. It can be tough. But it can be rewarding. And that's my strategy, like, late season, too. Early season, late season, any time of year, I'll hunt low.
Any questions so far? Anything you want to ask based on what we've talked about?
Okay, I'll go to the next. All right, this one, you're probably going to be like, what the hell? Okay, so Cody, what is your current arrow setup? I don't even know. I have no idea. This is actually one of the questions that I get asked the most at shows over anything is, what is your arrow and broadhead setup? Or what is, like, arrow weight forward, or what do you call it? Center forward?
FOC.
I get that all the time. I don't even know. I know that I'm shooting an iron wheel wide now as my head, but you're looking at a guy who up until a couple years ago was shooting a 2006 Darton. And then, like, the first bow that I got was, like, I shot an Obsession for a year. It doesn't matter to me. I've never been into bows. I've never been into archery, never been into shooting. Like, my passion is the hunt. And if it's going to send an arrow where I need it to go at 20 yards and under, like, that's really all I care about. I mean, I know that, like, there's awesome things about it. It's like I was even talking to Garrett about this. I'm like, man, there's so many awesome things about the bow that we got, but I don't know any of them. I really don't. Like, and I've never cared to get into that retrospect of it. Like, I'm all, if it sends the arrow, but I do know that people have looked at me weird. My arrow is weirdly light with no FOC, so I know that. But I just never really. So you guys might be able to, like, give a good arrow setup for whitetail or something, but I can't. I know it's a gold tip.
I mean,
it's a gold tip arrow.
Shot placement. That's your best arrow setup. What does your bow shoot the best? Where are you accurate? Arrow placement kills over any arrow setup you can put together. However, I do like more of that 550 range than you see a lot of these kind of 350 range that bows used to be set up for speed. I think a little bit heavier, you got just a little bit more for, you get more kinetic energy, and it also, it's a quieter shot. Mm-hmm. But what's your bow shoot the best? That's the arrow you should be shooting. Shot placement kills more than any other arrow setup.
I shoot 484 grains. I shoot an iron wheel. I do not shoot the wides. I have shot the wides before. I prefer the smaller diameter heads. Just my opinion. I like their solid series or their bended series. I think, like, I don't need 500 some odd grains. Not that there's nothing wrong with that. I know guys who kill deer with 650 grain arrows. I know guys who kill deer with 330 grain arrows. You know, it's about, like you said, shot placement. You know, Cody kills deer with spoons. So, you know, that's we've been fighting for 3 days about broadhead sharpness. I'm a sharpness guy. I think, like, my broadhead should be sharp. Cody likes to shoot spoons.
I don't care, man. Because the one point about this that Jake, the one point I'm making is exactly how Garrett opened this up. If you hit him, if you put an arrow through their vitals, it is not going to matter whether your broadhead can shave your hair or whether it can just cut you normally. Like, that's my point. Like, yeah. I would rather use a field point than use some of these mechanical things that could go wrong on me or hit a limb or affect penetration. Like, because if you're hitting them, where, like, there's so much thought on, like, oh, well, I want to do this, because if I hit the deer messed up, it'll die. I want to get more cutting diameter because if I hit him in the neck, he'll bleed more. That shouldn't even be a thought process in your mind, in my opinion. Like it you should not be you should know in your head that you're going to drill that deer, and that's it. And then you will. If you start thinking like, oh, I'm going to shoot a extra large Y or extra large Rage, just in case he spins on me and I can slit his belly open or something. Like, what? Why even think like that? It's like it's you're defeating yourself before you even get in the game. So it's just one of those things where I don't care about. Like the last two deer I shot this season, I literally wiped the blood off the broadhead and the arrow and used the same one. It was in good shape. It was a pass through. Didn't hit any rocks. Like, I mean, it's those iron wheel heads are tough as nails. I mean, like, and I told, and what started this conversation, I told Jake, I'm like, yeah, I'll just probably use the same broadhead this upcoming year. Like, you know, it don't matter to me. So, yeah, so that's where I'm at with that.
It's a confidence thing. Like, it's what we were talking about. Yep. Like, for
just
me,
like belief, like,
Cody's 100% right. Like, you know, you could do whatever you want as long as, if it's through the vitals, you're good. You know, I'll reiterate the same thing. Like, be confident in what you got going on. Whether you have to sharpen your broadhead or use the same one you've killed two booners with, you know, whatever works for you.
Well, there you have it. That was a little sneak peek of the Q&A sections you can expect to see at the Mobile Hunter Roadshow. I hope this answers some of your lingering questions, and tune in next time for part 2 of the Benton Q&A. See you next time.